I mean, what is soul?
Allora, adesso te lo dico io. Cos'è soul? Non importa come lo fai. Più alto possibile, meglio è. Pensavi di saperlo tutto. Nel suono giù nell'Atlantico. Col miglior ritmo su questo pianeta. Canta se vuoi, non ti sbaglierai. Accendi questa bomba. Londra è il posto dove troverai questo ritmo. Sono nato nel sud.
Welcome to Played Tapes 74. This is your host, Dr. Groove, and the format is 1 hour of good music. Well, I can't lie to you, the news continues to worsen. If you want to get the news, which I'm sure you're already aware of, you can get the update at the end, which is about an hour into the show. And this is the last Poxy Day on this Poxy year 2020. And we are getting through it, and 2021 is going to start off with us emerging from this darkness. And what I wanted to say was that it's been pretty awful, and it's going to get more difficult, but people have continued to survive and thrive and get over it and get through it together, and that's what we're going to do. But I really sincerely hope that when we do get through it, we actually look back and make some of the changes that are badly needed, because those who are marginalized, those who are exploited, those who are at the edge of society and who need care have been overlooked and pushed further to the side. And I think we need to restore some sort of balance in society, because otherwise, if we learn nothing, then I think that's it for us, really. That's my thinking for now. The other thing I was going to say was there's a song that I haven't played yet, which I'm going to play now, and I can't believe I haven't thought of it up to now. And that's where we're going to start. So this is David Bowie with Scary Monsters and Super Creeps, and I couldn't think of a better song to encapsulate the year that we've just had. And it's one of the first albums I really remember being totally enamored with. Anyway, here we go, Bowie. Keep me running.
stupid in the street and she can't socialize. Well, I love the little girl and I love her till the day she dies. She wails, humans guitar sound, killers who scream, waiting at the lights, know what I mean. Scary monsters, super creeps, keep me running, running scared. Scary monsters, and super creeps, keep me running, running scared.
Jimmy Brown, he ain't got nothing at all. Not the shirt right off his back, he ain't got nothing at all. And say a word for Ginger Brown. Walks with his head down to the ground. Took the shoes right off his feet. Threw the poor boy right out in the street. And this is what he said. They threw her out in that you landed on a feet and say a word, but John alone. She ain't got nothing at all. But every day she falls in love. Every night she falls.
Oh,
There you go. That was Dub Tractor with W30, taken off a All Back to Mind Talvin Singh compilation album, which introduced me to people like Alifark Touré and Nusrat Ali Khan with Must, and other names that I will marmalize and mispronounce. Before that, we had Velvet Underground from Loaded, which was the first album I think I got by the Velvet Underground. I got the Banana LP. The second was the second album that they got, and even though, I mean, I think Loaded's an amazing album, and I continued to listen to it. And I got a text from an old friend of mine who was listening to Lonesome Cowboy Bill, and it reminded me to dig it up. And there's just, it's just such a great rock and roll album. But I think the guitar sound on that tune that we just heard, Oh Sweet Nothing, is beautiful. It's kind of country, but it's also rock and roll. It's kind of soft and warm and melancholic. I think it's really hard to find something that's like that. Anyway, if you missed that bit, rewind and go back and listen to it again. That's a beautiful tune. And that was Lou Reed working with two brothers, I think, because everybody else had left the band at that stage. The original lineup. And we started off with Bowie with Scary Monsters and Super Creeps, and that was an amazing album. Robert Fripp had a lot to do with that. Bowie was very good at picking people up, little magpie that he was, and then working with them and getting the best from them. Okay, now we're going to go into, I didn't expect this when I was putting it together, but we're going to go into a bit of a thumping electronic stuff now, initially with Atomic Dogs and then the Chemical Brothers from, oh, long time ago, maybe 2000 or maybe 1998, I don't know, something like that, like years ago. And then we'll slow it down again and I'll chat to you then. You're listening to Plague Tape 74. News is coming up, last program in this poxy year. Who'd have thunk it at the beginning of the year that I would have been doing 74 of these shows, because we were living through a pandemic and trying to do some public service broadcasting on Radioactive International. Pretty unpredictable. Anyway, let's wash that stuff out with a bit of thumping electronica. We'll be right back.
type of alpha beta psychedelic fucking.
Thank you.
Today I'm a little bit delicate, but I thought it was about time we brought you some news as well, because it's been a while and you know that things ain't going rightly out there. So Andrew's gonna follow this up with an update. And what other wisdom do I have for you? We had a bit of a rave, bit of a kitchen, old style kitchen rave last night, so things are a bit delicate here today, and I'm surviving on chocolate and caffeine, and it's a marvelous combination, and I would recommend it. The other thing, sometimes when it all gets a bit much, I come up to the music room here and I just put on some jazz and lie down on the couch, and I might even fall asleep and wait until the record starts clicking. So I would recommend that. And if you don't get jazz, I understand that some people don't get it. I know a friend of mine said he couldn't even listen to a Duke Ellington track to get to the rest of the mix. So look, I understand it, because the great Andrew Weatherall said music isn't for everybody. But I would encourage you, I mean, it does really work for me, so you should try it. We're gonna finish the show off with a little jazz set, starting off with the wonderful pianist Ramsey Lewis and his interpretation of Dear Prudence, which is kind of, I think, soundtrack jazz. That's what I was gonna say. It's kind of all orchestrated. Then we have the wonderful Alice Coltrane, and then we have a beautiful Herbie Hancock number, which has Anthony Williams on drums, has the Ron Carter on bass, and it has Freddie Hubbard on trumpet, and it's called Dolphin Dance. So, and after that, there might be one other tune, and we'll go straight through to the news. So, listen, you got through 2020. We all did, and if we just get through the first rough part, the rough quarter one of 21, I think we can start making some of those changes that desperately need to make, move our society from this cul-de-sac short-termism that dominates within capitalism. And we need to really get back to society being about people, looking after people, and living in harmony with the earth. I mean, it's really simple. We just got to really work it. All you need is love. See yous on the other side in 21. Thank you.
Love. Love is a sacred word. Love is the name of God. The entire universe is created with love, by love, and in love. Love is the beginning. Love is the continuation. And love is the end. Love for love's sake is divine. It is constructive. It is beautiful. It brings peace. It brings harmony. It brings joy to the lover and to the loved. But if love based on selfishness, egoism, the very same love brings destruction. Peace and harmony is based on love. When used properly by a selfless mind for the benefit of the humanity, love knows no business. Love knows no bargain. Love never expects anything in return. Love knows only giving, giving and giving, without even waiting for a thank you. Such a love is the supreme one. let that love supreme reign over the universe. Om Shanti, Shanti. Thank you.
Thank you. Solutions within this system are so impossible to find, then maybe we should change the system itself.
Some foreign power, some group of terrorists.
If you don't know your past, then you don't know your future.
World, there is something changing in the climate of consciousness on this planet today.
Public. Word.
Hello and welcome to Plague Tapes 74 on the last day of this year of our plague, 2020. And you will already have guessed that the news is not good. So to give us an accurate picture of just the level of shit that we're actually in, Andrew's here in the studio.
Well, I guess in terms of cases, this will probably be the worst day of the pandemic of the year. I think, by quite a long shot, in fact. The North, a few minutes ago, announced just under 2,000 cases, but the positivity rate was 42%. I think 41.6%, to be more exact, which means that obviously there's a lot of cases missing. This morning, the CMO's letter to Stephen Donnelly confirmed what I've been saying online the last few days, which is that although our cases have been really large numbers, they should in fact be much higher again, because lots of the positive swabs weren't getting reported each evening. And they confirmed that, and that there was a backlog of 1,400, but that was yesterday's figure, and there was another 1,000 or more added to that last night.
Okay, hold on. Let's just take it in bits and bobs. 42% positivity in the North.
Yeah.
We said previously that anything over 3% was dangerous in terms of,
yeah, and then over 5%, everybody agrees, and New York was doing 3%.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that's kind of gives us a level of perspective in terms of 1,400 cases, and we have to factor in the fact that we're not even, because of the 10-day lag.
Yeah. The worst ones are going to come.
So this is going to be, it's the highest, going to be the highest number of cases today, for the year, and we're expecting that it's going to get worse. It'll peak probably in 5 days' time.
Well, because there's a big backlog, in fact, if that all gets reported more or less at once today, which it might, I mean, they're doing the press conference at 3, which is kind of early, if they were going to be pushing to get everything through.
Yeah.
But it might, I would say if it does, then between the southern and northern cases, in theory, you could have 6,000 cases reported on the island. In practice, I suspect it won't, so it'll be less than that.
Right.
But I think yesterday we 3,861 on the island as a whole. And 1,700 of those were in the south. But so that's where we are. So basically, yes, all those numbers are bad. Hospitalizations in the south have doubled over the space of about 5 days. ICU admissions have now started to, I mean, when you look at these as curves, they're very steep curves, have started to increase in a similar way. We won't see the deaths, obviously, for another 10 or more days, but all the metrics are saying this is extremely bad and getting worse. And then on top of that, we've now got this English variant of the virus circulating. It was about 10% of cases that they tested, I think, 70 samples and found it in 10% of them.
So 10% of cases in Ireland, or is
In the north, they said that they found them 50%. So in the south, it's only part of the story. I mean, the real story is that there's lots of people who've 15 or 30 close contacts, basically. So that's why it's going up. You don't need to talk about that variant, but it does mean that it's here and spreading, and it's going to make it even harder in the weeks to come. So all the bad news rolling in on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. Okay, so just in terms of the, I think what we should talk about a little bit is the capacity. So it sounds like we've already hit capacity. Like there's no headroom if we've got doubling hospitalizations.
So that's interesting. So basically they obviously anticipated that this was a potential problem.
Yeah.
Right. And so they did a number of things to help get as much capacity into the system as possible. Now, one of those and the things, and part of this is accidental, is that because the flu is much less infectious than COVID, all the measures we're taking to stop COVID spreading are stopping the flu spreading. Yeah. So there's actually, I think, had no hospital confirmed cases of flu. Whereas at this time of the year, you might have 600 people in hospital with flu, right? So that's one load of people. They also set up care pathways that are trying to keep people out of hospitals, right? Particularly elderly people. And that's all the way from community hubs to some of the ambulance services now have paramedics that can do a sort of initial diagnosis. So that's keeping people out as well. So
primary care, they're trying to head people off at the pass, basically.
Yeah, so right before Christmas. Now, Christmas, you send everybody home from hospital who's not very sick.
Yeah.
There's no point them spending the Christmas period in a hospital because there'll be nobody to see them or test them or anything else. But they managed to get, I think, 1,400 empty beds, so on December 24th, say. But of course, probably half of those are now being reoccupied by people just coming back in again.
Yeah.
There is, I think this morning, there was 600 empty beds. And so basically, there's probably enough capacity for 10 days, depending on how this goes. It's hard to be sure. It's hard to be sure how big a disaster Christmas is going to be. And Christmas Day will come on about day 7 of those 10 days. The effect of it will start around then, about 11 days afterwards. It's very hard to see that we won't overrun capacity, but it might be that enough has been done now to make so it won't be much of an overrun.
Right.
Or not. But I think probably anybody who's got surgery in the new year is getting a phone call telling them it's cancelled at the moment. Routine admissions for testing, all that sort of stuff. I'd imagine right now all that's been cancelled to try and make as much space as possible.
But there was talk also about the army being used. How are the army being used?
No, they're using them to bolster the number of people doing testing and tracing, basically.
Testing and tracing,
yeah.
Okay.
So they had, early on the pandemic, they trained a load of the army in to do the phone calls. And then they've recruited 750 people to do those calls, and then they're adding the army into that. But the testing and tracing system is at capacity. They expanded it quite a lot. I mean, if you go right back to March, we were struggling to do 3,000 tests. And now, including the German lab contract, they can do, I think, 27,000 a day. So it has expanded massively. But as you know, Paul Reed was saying at the press conference yesterday, and he's sort of right, is that there's no point adding capacity indefinitely because you'll always overrun it.
Yeah.
And once you've hit that overrun stage, well, then COVID is so common, which is what the case it is now, that if you have symptoms, the chances are it's COVID, so you should just isolate. You know, that the test isn't that useful in terms of a control mechanism anymore. So that, I think that's the point we're sort of getting to again.
So if you're actually developing symptoms, you wouldn't even wait for a test. You can apply for a test, but I would just start isolating.
Yeah, well, that's what they're saying. And I just before I came up, I read a very angry tweet from a border doctor, I think Monaghan, who says she's been ringing people who've tested positive, and a load of them, when they've picked up the phone, they've been in shops or in a car, obviously on the way somewhere, even though these are people who are symptomatic and positive and clearly should be isolating. So I think some of the spread is down to that sort of behavior, you know,
Have we got any idea in terms of, okay, there's two things. If we look at the dashboard the dashboard about how much of it is out there at the moment? I mean, we certainly know anecdotally, like, I think there's 6 different people that we know in our radar network that all have it at this stage. So do we have an idea what we're looking at in terms of per 100,000? How many?
So the current figure is up, maybe it's 270. I think I do have that, a note of that here. 272. But we know, with the backlog and everything else, we know that's an
underestimate. The real figure is probably twice that.
It's probably twice that. The North is heading for 1,000.
1,000 per 100,000.
Yeah, there's 7-day incidents, is something like, they don't do a 14-day, they do a 7-day.
Yeah.
It's something like 443. If you double it, that's up above 900. Now, it probably isn't fair to double it because a lot of the increases have been in recent days, so that's a little bit too crude, but
it's very high,
basically.
And do we think
1,000 is 1% of the people being currently infectious, by the way. So.
Right. And the R value in Ireland at the moment, have we got an idea?
It's south 1.8, I think.
It's over 1.8.
It's around 1.8. 1.6 to 1.8 was the last estimate. But again, given all the inaccuracy in the numbers in recent days, that's an underestimate. It will be higher.
So, just having a little look at things, well, two things. One point I want to make is that Leo made this statement where he didn't expect it to go the way it did, right? And I think we should clearly point out that when they opened up the restaurants on the 29th of June, this is exactly what happened. They did it again, and we predicted it again, and then they said...
Just listen to the archive of all the
exactly.
Past shows.
And so there's no way
about this all the way through.
There's no way that this was not predicted. This was eminently predictable, so just so frustrating to listen to that. But the other aspect of it is that we're now actually having done quite well in terms of the second wave.
Mm.
We are now making news in California. People are hearing about how bad it is, has turned. So we're now making headlines in the wrong direction.
Yeah, we've gone from having the lowest incidence in Europe about 3 weeks back when they decided to open everything up to now having the fastest increasing incidence in Europe. Now, we're not the highest because we're coming from a low point, but we're kind of trains in the night passing.
We're really
passing.
We're really gathering speed.
Yeah, yeah.
And is this just our total inability to keep? Is this just the Irish Christmas? We have to go and see 40 people. I mean, what's the factor?
No, my anecdotal impression would be a lot of people have continued to be very careful. And it's interesting because some of the cases I've heard about are in situations, I'm somewhat hopeful this will turn out to be general, where the where there was a family Christmas and the grandparents said, well, I'm not going.
Yeah.
You know, if that's happened more generally, then what's coming may not be quite as bad as what I'd be worried about. I think what it essentially is, it's the government to salvage 3 weeks of the restaurants trade, which seems like the cost benefit analysis here seems ludicrous. Reopened hospitality, and when you reopen hospitality, you're sending people the message that it is safe for 6 different households to be around a single table, so you're closer than a meter to each other in a room where there's 50 other people, potentially 50 different households crowded together. Right now, if that's the message, then people naturally enough are going to go, well, it's a similar situation in my house, you know. That's not an unreasonable thing for them to assume. Now, it's not what the government was saying. They were saying, oh no, you can only have people over and only 3 households over the bit about Christmas. Yeah. But that's not what most
people
are going to hear.
People see the hypocrisy
what they're going to hear is that this is allowed, and maybe they're looking at their Instagram stories and it's full of photos of friends who are out at restaurants. And so you're looking at that and going, well, obviously that's what's now safe. That's the message you hear. We've been told this is safe, so this is what you do. And that's disastrous in this context. If you go back to March, where there was coming up to Paddy's Day and there was all the clamour to shut the pubs and all that sort of stuff. So that was one context where people were probably going, oh, that's a really dangerous space to go into. And instead, coming up to Christmas, we have the absolute opposite being portrayed, where we're being told these are safe, even though it's bloody obvious, listen to the old shows, that they're not safe. This is going to be a disaster. So that's what's got us here. You know, it's not... I mean, the governments are now... anonymous government sources are now quoting that the problem is people not doing what they were meant to have done, etc., etc. But that's kind of bullshit.
Fuck them.
Yeah.
I mean, really. I mean, you're the guys who decided that you were going to open up everything for Christmas and everything was going to return.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of the mix. But of course, that's what's going to happen when you send such a mixed message.
Yeah.
You know, when you send the message that we're opening the shops for, you know, everything's opening up, the restaurants are opening up, they're even running ads encouraging people to safely dine at restaurants. What do you think's going to happen? That's exactly what happens.
The really frustrating thing is that in the countries that were doing worse, we had all this. We saw what the second wave was like in Europe. Yeah, we knew exactly what was coming.
And we could see
across
the border what was happening.
Yeah, we didn't have to go very far. Yeah. You just get in the car and you're at a really horrific example. And still, it made no difference in terms of their actions. But it's really reprehensible then to start blaming people.
Yeah,
because that mixed messaging thing has also been has been the blight of the UK. The UK has been a disaster because of that mixed messaging, the slowness to react, the UK government's, the Tories, like not shutting things down, reinventing things, hiding figures. And we saw what that resulted in. And that was what led to the North being so bad. And then we have our government doing exactly the same thing. Yeah. And now they have the gall to actually start blaming people for it.
Yeah, and it's worth remembering, I mean, this is partially what Neffert are advocating. It's also what we've been saying should happen in terms of the show, which is that they should have, in the November surge, they should have shut down earlier. In any case, we should have stayed shut down until we got the incidents down from... down to like 25. You know, that was the sort of target. Yeah. Less than 100 cases a day. Yeah. You know,
we never got that far. We got to what, 200?
Not even 200. Not, it was about 270.
Hmm.
And if that had been done right, and if we saw it go wrong in the same way that things are going wrong now, right? Well, then it would have started doubling from 100 cases and not from 300 cases, which would mean that now, rather than worrying we're going to see 4,000 cases tonight, we'd be worrying we were going to see about 800, you know?
Yeah.
So it could still have gone disastrously wrong at that lower level, but it wouldn't be anything like what
you're
we're about to go
at
through.
Such a high level.
Yeah, exactly. Or if, as it became obvious, things had gone wrong, we'd stuck with what the other plan was, which was just to extend it closer to Christmas itself, open for a brief period around Christmas. Well, then, yes, you still might have had a doubling, but you'd have had a doubling from, you know, one doubling from an incidence of 30. So you might have gone up to an incidence of 60.
Yeah.
So again, it's not like that was risk-free, but it wouldn't have been particularly terrible at all. You know, it just would have been, that's a bit sad. You know, there's 10 people have died as a result of it. Instead, I think we're looking at 1,000 deaths, basically. I think that would be my expectation. It's going to be somewhere in that sort of region, which is one hell of a cost.
Yeah, there's your short-termism writ large for your 3 weeks of shopping spree at Christmas.
Yeah, so wave one, 1,770 died. Wave two, 440 have died. It kind of depends on where you put them. But
and there's wave three, we don't know. And
we don't know.
We could shoot the lights out here. We could break what we did in wave one.
I hope that wouldn't happen. I think part of the reason the toll was so heavy in wave one was they didn't really understand the disease very well. So they didn't spot it getting into nursing homes until it was too late, and they didn't have good ways of stopping it getting in. So it shouldn't be that bad again.
Yeah.
But the thing is, once you're this out of control, who can say? And actually, the North has not done a good job in that respect.
We've also been in this room where I've gone like, oh, I really hope it doesn't hit 600 by Monday, and it hit 600 by Friday.
Yeah,
so
there's
always that potential. Okay, so briefly, to wrap up, where are we for the next... We'll hopefully do another one next week. So we're into a lockdown, I presume, that will last probably January, February... Will it be 2 months?
They're saying to the end of the month, given that they've allowed it to get this out of hand, and the rate generally it decreases at about 6% a day if it's a really strong lockdown. I can't. They've said the end of January. I don't think it can be the end of January. I think it will be later than that.
It's 6 weeks, I would say, I would say 8 weeks.
Yeah, it depends. A lot of that depends on... You see, the other problem is I think they've now undermined people's adherence to measures quite strongly. Now, the thing is, people are going to get a big scare from the amount of deaths that are coming.
Well,
so
that's the thing is, like, they might have undermined the message, but they are going to know people who are going to die.
I mean,
that's going to have an effect.
Yeah, so that may mean adherence becomes quite...
Yeah.
It's a bit more like April. Yeah. So, I mean, from that point of view, it should reduce faster. And, I mean, at the moment they're talking about reopening the schools in January the 11th, which seems very foolish because I actually do think transmission in schools is much lower. But if you have everything else shut and you have the schools open, then that's where the transmission between households will happen.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. So I think with this sort of ultra-high incidence, the only thing you can do is shut down absolutely everything that you can and allow infections to essentially run out within households.
Yeah.
And then you get back towards a situation which is a bit more like what we were towards the summer.
But also, if you keep anything open at all at this stage, you won't have the ability to do the contact tracing. The infection rates are too high.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everything is stacked against
you. No, I mean, everything says you have to slam numbers down as fast as possible at this point.
Because your ability to do whack-a-mole becomes impossible. Okay. I think that's fine. I don't really want to talk about it much more, to be honest.
Ending on a positive note.
Oh, really? Great. I didn't think it was possible.
Yeah. No, I'm always able to do that. I'd say at least 34,000 people have now been vaccinated, almost all of them in the north, but vaccinations have started in four of the acute hospitals in the south.
Oh, yeah. We saw some woman from the Liberties getting vaccinated, the first woman.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is underway. South, we're probably going to have... There's a bit of uncertainty about security of supply. So between 20 and 40,000 people a week being vaccinated in over the next couple of months, and then escalating from that. And a lot of that will focus initially on the most vulnerable groups. So that and because the North's already been doing that, that will cut the actual fatalities quite substantially. I mean, not absolutely, but. You know, it should reduce the impact a bit. Although, if you don't get hold of cases, that doesn't work because there's just too many cases out there. But you know, there is the whole vaccination.
There is light. There's light out there.
Yeah. There is light out there.
Okay, so we might have just like the season. We may have gone through the dark. Well, actually, no, that's unfair to say. We might have the darkest piece to come, but this lockdown. When we emerge from the next lockdown, we shall be starting to see the beginning of the end.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's where we'll end it.
That will have to do.
That will have to do. Exactly.
Best I can do.
Exactly. All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Just good. if you gave me all the things I'd never ask of you, if you showed me all the ways you have to cry, if you lay all night in the rain with me, I couldn't love you more, just couldn't love you more, just couldn't.